This is ESPN Radio.
Number three here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, I love you. I love this show. Happy to be a part of it. But the minute I say to anybody that I am willing to be buried here in Bristol, Connecticut, will be the coldest day on record in hell. I'm sorry.
I ain't mad at you, brother. I love you too, but it's not going down like that over here. So much respect for Coach McGuire and taking that stance with Texas Tech. God bless him, man.
Hey, good for you, man.
That guy is all in on that program on a whole different level.
Yeah, no, that is buying. That first team meeting is going to be a doozy if that was the press conference. Because imagine what it's going to be like when they close the doors with that dude in there. So
think about it. If you're a parent of a kid that's being recruited by his program, it's like you have full confidence that the coach is going to be there all 4 years because the man is on the record saying he's going to die as the head coach of that program.
All I can think about now, Chris, is the prospect of giving him like a soft verbal commitment. It's like, what do you mean, verbal commitment? I want this in blood.
Right? I don't understand.
Yeah, what is a verbal commitment? You mean you're looking elsewhere? Nah, fam, we are ready to go around here. So that is the mood at Texas Tech right now. Congrats to them in Lubbock. We will get more news and notes from around the world of sports. We still got Adam Schefter coming up in about a half hour here on the show, our NFL insider. We've also got Christian Winfield, does a great job covering the Brooklyn Nets. Going to cue us into what the hell is going on with that team right now, because we're not ready to sound the alarm just yet, but it ain't looking great right now. But Chris, we did have the College Football Playoff Committee put out another round of rankings last night, and doing the rankings reaction show that I do with Jason Fitz and Christine Williamson, I was sitting around like you were watching Gary Barta and the College Football Playoff Committee.
And y'all were going in on those Cheez-Its, by the way.
Oh, dude,
like,
listen,
y'all couldn't,
man,
give them a break.
Listen, they are a wonderful sponsor of that show. They also happen to be delicious as hell. I can't be helped for that, Chris. You're going to sit them down there in front of me. I am only capable of so much. I am of beef, right? Like, we come from the 300-pound world, so I had to do us justice.
Yeah, but Christine took it to a whole nother level. She kidnapped one of them bowls y'all had on the table, and I was just like, wow. She is marking her territory and staking her claim off the top. That was impressive.
It's a competitive couch in there, man. You got to stake your claim on those early on in the broadcast, or you are going to get left behind. So we didn't want any of that to happen. And so once I was good and full on Cheez-Its, I almost spit a bunch of them out, Chris, because we heard Gary Barta, who has the unenviable job as the chairman of the College Football Playoff Committee, of trying to get up and explain what 13 people voted on over the course of these rankings. And what we ended up with was largely what we had had already here. For anyone that had missed the top end of the rankings, it is still Georgia at number one, Alabama at number two, Oregon at number three, Ohio State at number four, followed by Cincinnati at five, Michigan at six, and Michigan State at seven. And so it's still the same conundrum of, all right, Michigan State beat Michigan head-to-head but 3 weeks ago. Why does that not matter more? And Chris, when I heard Gary Barta get up there and say, well, if you put watching the games aside and just look at the numbers, you'll see Michigan clearly better than Michigan State in a lot of those areas. And I understand what he's trying to do, but man, that is the last thing you need to give to the public who already doesn't trust a lot of this process.
Well, here's the thing, Gojo. The numbers and the analytics are just for us to be able to project what it would look like in head-to-head matchups when it came to these teams that are going to be included in chasing after a national championship. But the one thing we can say about Michigan and Michigan State, we saw it play out on the field. I mean, the numbers that you should be concerned with are the scoreboard. It's binary. This is not something that's subjective. We actually know what the outcome was. These two teams played head-to-head, and Michigan State bested Michigan. Now, I get it. Michigan had a double-digit lead on the road against a conference opponent and ended up blowing that. But you got to give credit where credit is due. Michigan State fought back, and they won that game. Now, just so happens that they had a mental and emotional letdown the following week against Purdue, but we can't hold that against them in terms of the College Football Playoff ranking. They should be ranked ahead of Michigan if the committee is going to use that same logic when it comes to head-to-head values when you're comparing Ohio State and Oregon. Ohio State has the better of the two losses between the two teams because we know Oregon lost to a Stanford team that they had no business losing to. So, I mean, I just don't understand the inconsistency with the committee. But that being said, with the Big Ten, we know Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State all of that stuff's going to play itself out starting this weekend with the Spartans playing Ohio State. We'll figure that part of it out, and we'll see what ends up settling when it comes to the Big Ten picture. But overall, I mean, it's just a situation right now where we're trying to figure out who outside of that top seven has a legitimate pathway to being one of the final four teams when it's all said and done. And to me, the most revealing part about it is where the committee put Oklahoma State, actually vaulting them into the top 10, putting them, I think, at number 9 right now. And it feels like they have a viable path to being able to be in those final four rankings at the end of the season. So that's the part that I thought was the most intriguing. And then I thought the sidebar or the footnote to that was when Gary Barta said that there was a lot of conversation amongst committee members on 2, 3, and 4. It just led me to believe that Alabama might not be as entrenched at that number 2 spot as a lot of people might think. And with dates with Auburn down the stretch at the end of the season, they've got a date with Arkansas this weekend coming up. And then you talk about the SEC championship game. Like, it's not a fait accompli that Alabama is going to be one of those final four teams. They got 3 tough tests that they got to get past in order to earn that right.
Yeah, but Chris, they're, I think, the most important team going forward, because you mentioned it. Almost everything else is going to take care of itself. The Big Ten East is largely going to sort itself out. Oklahoma State, who right now sits behind one loss Notre Dame, would absolutely jump them if they finish out this season with a win at Bedlam and then get a win in the Big 12 championship game as well. That would likely be 2 more ranked wins for them, and a one-loss conference champion looks very good given their resume, given them already being at 9. But Alabama's got the chance to make this interesting. Big Ten's going to sort itself out. Big 12's going to sort itself out. Pac-12 going to sort itself out with Oregon. All that on the field. And Cincinnati gets a chance for ranked Houston. But Alabama, with one loss sitting at number 2 to a lot of people, signaled, hey, that loss didn't really count all that much for them. And so Heather Dinich was on with Keyshawn, J1, Max this morning and got asked the question, because something else Gary Barta said last night was, hey, strength of schedule matters to us. That's why you see one loss teams afraid of an undefeated team, maybe even a 2-loss team in some instances. And so it prompted the question to Heather Dinich about the probability of a 2-loss Alabama getting in.
Well, I certainly wouldn't rule it out, especially as Alabama has been sitting there at number 2 pretty steady. But given that Gary Barta said last night that there was a lot of discussion about 2, 3, and 4, more so than in past weeks, it leads me to question just how secure Alabama is in that number 2 spot. And while I do believe that there's a possibility that a 2-loss Bama can get in this thing, I think it has to be an absolute thriller, an instant classic, in order for them to justify it.
Chris, I really don't even know if I can go that far. Like a 2-loss non-conference champion in the year that we've got, especially if Cincinnati's sitting there with a goose egg in the loss column and a conference championship win, I just don't think you can let that happen. Alabama has not gone out and dominated in the ways that, to me, say, yes, this should be a no-brainer, even if they've got 2 losses there and 1 very impressive loss in the last game of the season.
Gojo, let me ask you this question. Like, I understand that Notre Dame continuing to win is going to help bolster Cincinnati's resume, but how important is it that the committee put Houston in the top 25 in their rankings?
Huge. Absolutely massive, Chris, because you're right. It's all about that another resume point. Everyone talks about that 13th data point, the conference championship weekend. Mm-hmm. That's where they would see Houston in there. And so not only is it that they are ranked, it's that there's a chance they could continue to move up a little bit in the rankings before we get to that conference championship game. And then the committee watches all of those games together, Chris. That's the other part of this, is that last weekend, they're all down in Dallas for the conference championship games together. And so that could be a chance for a resounding win while they're all in that room digesting it together in a way that sends a very concrete message. So I think that's massive for them.
Yeah, here's the thing. I know the committee is charged with coming up with the 4 best teams in all the land to compete for the national title, but I just feel like by virtue of their resume, and if they do run the table, Cincinnati's going to be in. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I think that Cincinnati is one of the top 4 teams in the country, but you can only play who's on your schedule, and if they run the table and they're undefeated, and you're talking about them beating 2 teams that were in the top 25 as far as the committee is concerned, then they're absolutely going to be in the college football playoffs. And if you're talking about comparing them versus a 2-loss Alabama team that doesn't win the conference championship, you know, them be the breaks for Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide. Like, they're not going to be competing for the Natty, nor should they, because based on how they set up this system, Cincinnati would have earned their way into it.
And that's always going to be a part of this. Everyone talks about for best, that most deserving part ends up being what's your body of work and what did your resume show throughout the season. Candy and Golic Jr. here want to remind you to check out the Man in the Arena podcast. It's a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. It's available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For a mortgage experience you can be a fan of, Rocket can. Coming up next, though, we got to get to reminding people exactly what they may have missed from this weekend, why Chris Canty has taken his gaze away from kickers and officials and set it straight on running backs. Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is where you can get in touch with us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. You can also tweet the show at ChrisCanty99 and at Mike Golic Jr. And before we get to Adam Schefter with some updates, news, and notes around the NFL as we try and take stock of some injuries heading into the weekend with some big games, actually, that we can also get to in a little bit here. Some real, listen, we can't call them must wins yet, Chris, but there's some definite can't lose action coming up this weekend in the NFL.
Oh, no doubt about it. Week 11 is full of them, and I can't wait to get to them. We got more of that in the 6 o'clock hour, so I'm excited to chop it up about that.
But we are also on Wednesday. We're midweek right now. And in the rush of Monday and Tuesday, we miss stuff sometimes. There's some things that slip through the cracks that we want to make sure come to your attention. And we want to remind you, people don't forget.
Hey, Greg, why don't you go f*** your pants again?
That was like 8 years ago.
People don't forget. Forget.
They don't. Guy pooped his pants. That was probably Jason Fitz.
Are a few things out there, Gojo, that you can do just one time, and ultimately you will be defined for the rest of your life off of that one event.
Pooping your pants.
Just the fact of the matter. Pooping your pants is probably one of them.
100%. No, yeah. You can't run from that.
No.
That stain lives forever, physically and metaphorically.
Yeah.
People don't forget. All right, let's take a look at some things that we missed this weekend, because this one had Chris Canty pretty hot and bothered yesterday here. 49ers rookie running back Elijah Mitchell, who's done really well for them this year in that Niners backfield, especially in the last couple of games, sustained a broken finger and will undergo a procedure. His status for Sunday's game against Jacksonville is unclear. Chris, why did this bother you?
I don't understand why his status is unclear or why it's uncertain. There should be no doubt that Elijah Mitchell is playing in this game. He's his team's leading rusher, and the next closest person is 400 yards away. There should be no doubt about whether or not he's going to play in this game. If he's got a broken finger, put some tape on it, put a pin in it, wrap it up, and let's go, man. You got a whole nother hand that you can use to tote the rock. I don't understand why he wouldn't be a participant in this game coming up, especially when you realize where his team is in the standings. They still have a chance at being one of those teams in contention for that last wild card spot in the NFC once the calendar hits December. I don't know how Elijah Mitchell could even have a question in his mind that he wouldn't be playing in this game on Sunday. Makes no sense to me. I don't get it. If you're a quarterback like Russell Wilson and it's on your throwing hand, okay, maybe it makes sense. If you're a wide receiver, I could possibly understand that. Although, when you look at Torrey Holt's hands, like his hands look like they're throwing up gang signs. Clearly, he's broken a few fingers and played through them. So I don't understand, like, if you're a non-quarterback, why a broken finger would keep you from playing in a game. Just don't make sense. I'm a guy, defensive lineman, I get it. I didn't have to catch the ball, but I've broken all of my fingers and one thumb. Never missed a game because of one of those. I'm just saying.
Soft. Soft is what it is here.
SOF, capital T, soft.
Chris, and you know what? The fact that in his own division, a quarterback just completely broke the return time from a similar injury where he threw a pin in that thumb on his throwing hand here lets you know you can't be getting outdone by the quarterback. Can't happen.
No.
Won't happen.
No. No, can't happen.
Can't coach him. All right. So that's out of the way here.
All right, got that off my chest. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
We'll get an update on Elijah Mitchell's status, by the way, with Adam Schefter when he joins us in about 5 minutes on this here program. But first, we got to get to the boys at Pittsburgh State. This was an interesting one. So Pittsburgh State, spelled without the H, was traveling to take on Fort Hays State on Saturday when their team bus broke down. It turned out to not be too big of a problem, though, because their long snapper and automotive technology major, Timmy Mullinowski, put his skills to good use. According to the Four States homepage, the team pulled over to the side of the road when the team's bus lost power. Molinowski quickly jumped to assist the problem and determined the bus was missing a hose clamp. He ended up using a Leatherman multi-tool that he had in his backpack to attach the hose clamp. Following his quick actions, the football team was back on the road. And wouldn't you know it, Chris, they made it to Fort Hays State, where they won by 10 in the team's regular season finale. That's MVP stuff.
Absolutely. I hope they gave the long snapper the game ball, because he absolutely deserves it, dude. Like, that is incredible. Who knew that their long snapper, a specialist that usually works with the kickers and the punters, ends up being MacGyver and has this whole kit in his backpack ready to go just in case something would happen with the bus? Like, that is unbelievable. That's a great story. All's well that ends well. But come on, Pittsburgh State. Like, I get it. You dropped the H, but come on. You can't be dropping situations when it comes to your transportation. Like, that's a bad look for the kids. Like, y'all need to get it together. Just throwing that out there.
Got
to
get that one right, but at the very least, they understood the teammates and the guys that they had out there.
The education level at Pittsburgh State is top-notch, though, because you got a guy that can fix the problem on the spot.
You got to put him on the pamphlet. He's got to be on every pamphlet going forward here. Make sure you advertise that when you're talking about Pittsburgh State athletics. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. So we've given you a couple of things to look at. We will get you one more thing, by the way, because we've talked so much about that Man in the Arena documentary, that docuseries going on here. Chris Canty took a listen, and we found some interesting in here. Reminders of some similarities between the Patriots of yesteryear and the Patriots of this year. We can get into more of that in a little bit. But coming up next, the Jets really starting Joe Flacco? We'll try and find out why after this word from AT&T. Now, guys, if there are friends and family members that you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for more details. Back after this with Adam Schefter on Canty and Golic Jr.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And that's where we got to head now to talk to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter as we reach the midway point on this week. And Adam, we heard from Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield that this might be the most beat up that he's ever been. We know his shoulder's already been injured for the last few games of this season. What more can you tell us about his status heading into the rest of this week?
Well, he's going to start Sunday. I don't think that's a question right now. He's not at full strength, but both he and Kevin Stefanski said today that he should be good enough to go on Sunday, which is what they're looking for right now. Now, we don't know how well he will or won't function, but I do expect him to start against the Detroit Lions. And, oh, by the way, we don't know whether Jared Goff will be out there. He did not practice today, and it looked like Nick Boyle, their quarterback who's been on IR, took the reps and looks like he could potentially wind up starting on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns.
Schefter, we got some news out of L.A. with the Chargers, Joey Bosa and Jerry Tillery being in COVID protocols. Do we have any projections in terms of their potential availability, their status, in their Sunday night matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers?
You know what's interesting about this is there are a whole slew of players here who are in question for Sunday night. We got Tillery and Bosa. We've got Ben Roethlisberger on the COVID list. Minka Fitzpatrick. Joe Hayden's hurt right now. Nasir Adderley's hurt. There are a bunch of question marks in regards to what's going to happen for Sunday night's game. And it's a key game for the playoff picture, and both teams look like they're not going to be at full strength.
Adam Schefter with us on the Goodyear Hotline. One team still not at full strength, the quarterback Zach Wilson for the New York Jets, still not ready to go with that injured knee. So now Joe Flacco, the veteran, getting the call up this weekend. Adam, what went into the decision to start Joe Flacco over Mike White, who we'd seen out there for the last four games?
Well, I think that Mike White got beat up physically, mentally last week, and I think that they feel like there's an aggressive defense that the Dolphins will bring to New York. And I think that they feel like an experienced quarterback like Joe Flacco is somebody that would be the right start for them. Now, again, this is a young rebuilding team, and Jets have played pretty well recently. But I think that they're looking for somebody like Joe Flacco to provide a steadying veteran presence that the other guys could not right now. I think that's the biggest thing.
Shefty, we got a huge matchup between the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs, one that everybody's looking forward to. I didn't realize this, but this is the first time that Dak Prescott and Pat Mahomes are going to meet. And I just wanted to ask you from your perspective, who is this game more important to? Is it the Kansas City Chiefs or is it the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, I think it's important to both. I don't know how you say it's more important to one or the other. The Chiefs have been rolling lately. And maybe more to the Chiefs, maybe. But they're both in first place. They both look poised to win their division. I just think it's kind of a statement game for each team to be able to move forward here. We'll see how it works out. But to me, it's important. Who's it more important to you, Chris? You tell me.
Well, I'd say the Dallas Cowboys because it feels like they have the clearer path to being able to win their division. I think they're three and a half games clear of the next closest team, that being the Philadelphia Eagles, because they hold the head-to-head tiebreaker. So I would lean in that direction. But, this is an opportunity for the Cowboys to make a statement because they haven't beat a team that made the playoffs last year to date. So I think this would be an important test for them in terms of being able to measure themselves. But I think in terms of margin of error, I would give the edge to the Dallas Cowboys by virtue of their division, and the Kansas City Chiefs feels like they have a little more competition in the AFC West.
Yeah, well, I think you can make a legitimate argument for each of the teams and how important it is to both, but I see your point. I mean, you know what? It's a big game, period. Period. For both teams, and it should be a great watch.
That much we can definitely say with Adam Schefter here on the Goodyear Hotline. Adam, as we head towards the holiday season here, Thanksgiving, temperatures starting to get colder here, and we know that immediately brings everyone's mind back to the virus, back to what we've been dealing with for the better part of the last 2 years here. How is the NFL adjusting their COVID protocols around this transition to this time of year?
Well, we're going to see next week around Thanksgiving holidays, players are going to have to wear masks. They're going to test it more frequently. I think it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever it may be. You're going to see a lot of all that next week. And they just think with the holiday travel, with people being around each other in large gatherings, that the league wants to be more comprehensive. I also want to say, though, you know, that these are league-imposed rules. This was not agreed to with the union. The union did not sign off on this. The NFL essentially imposed these rules, and the league just thought that it was wise to have these measures in place. I don't know that the NFLPA was particularly pleased about it, but it was unilaterally imposed by the NFL without the consent of the NFLPA.
Very interesting stuff as we get towards the end of this season here to keep an eye on, as we've seen, as Adam mentioned. Sunday Night Football, just one of the many games potentially impacted by both COVID positives and contact tracing. Adam, we appreciate the time and the info as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you guys. Have a great day.
Again, check out the Adam Schefter podcast as well, wherever you get your podcasts. And Chris, that's always interesting. I mean, with COVID, it seems to be one of those things where even if it's not collectively bargained currently, something like this with with ramped up testing has really been, remember what J.C. Tretter, the head of the NFLPA, was asking for before the season, even for vaccinated individuals.
No, you're right, because J.C. Tretter is prioritizing player safety and everything that entails. So you can understand why they're going to err on the side of caution when it comes to making sure that guys are tested and making sure that if there are any positive tests or there are any close contacts, that they're going to try to isolate those players just so they can maintain the integrity of the season and protect the players at all costs. So I applaud them for doing that, but you realize the implications that this game, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Chargers are going to play on Sunday night, has on the AFC playoff picture, and it's a shame not to be able to see both of those teams at full strength, or at least we don't anticipate seeing both of those teams at full strength.
Going to be a lot of that down the stretch of this NFL season here. Teams going back to what we saw last year, waking up every day, coaches waiting to see whose names come back in on the COVID positive list and having to adjust accordingly in these games. Coming up next, though, we just talked to you about things that people don't forget here. Let's go back to one thing we got to remember loud and clear thanks to something new from ESPN Podcast, next on ESPN Radio. Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We'll head out to Brooklyn to fix some problems with that Nets team. and figure out how many real problems there are outside of Kyrie Irving just, you know, not doing the whole vaccine thing. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Chris, before we get to that, though, I thought it was interesting. You and I were talking earlier today. It's amazing looking at this year's Patriot team at just how many connections there are to what they were in 01. When you look at how they're built, when you look at how they came together, tons of offseason acquisition, free agent moves, the likes of which we hadn't seen again really until this offseason. And at the center of all of it, a young quarterback who was out here balling. And Mac Jones, you know, he's starting to get there. It's been a slow build for him. Everyone's going to compare him to early Tom Brady's, but the formulas for these teams look remarkably similar.
No question about it, especially when you look at the personnel on the defensive side of the ball. Like, that was the part to me that was crazy. Like, just thinking about Willie McGinnis and Mike Vrabel and Teddy Bruschi, Lawyer Malloy, and Ty Laws. Just thinking about all of those guys. And if you run through this year's Patriots team, like, you can find comps at each and every one of those positions with their current personnel. I mean, Matt Judon is playing that Willie McGinnis role. I mean, if you want to say that Dont'a Hightower is Teddy Bruschi, I mean, go right ahead. Kyle Van Noy, Mike Vrabel. I mean, you go on and on. I mean, you look at J.C. Jackson. He's this rendition of the Patriots version of Ty Law. Like, I just, it just, Adrian Phillips for Lawyer Malloy. Like, the comparisons, Devin McCourty to Bucky Jones. Like, those guys.
Wow, it just to seems, Bucky Jones. That's
exactly,
a name.
Think about it. It just feels like there are a lot of comps that you have from the 2001 Patriots defense to the 2021 Patriots defense. And it made me think about something that I heard from Nick Saban on NFL Countdown on Sunday when he was talking about what makes Bill Belichick special. And he said that Bill Belichick, when he comes in as the head coach, he defines what success is and what the expectation is at every single position. So there isn't anything left up to interpretation from the coaching staff and from the players, all the way down to what allows certain players to have success at certain positions, like being able to identify the dominant traits that are important to being able to have success given the player's position. And so it just reminded me of that when you start running through the template that was the 2001 Patriots and how he's kind of recreated that with this version of the Patriots defense and that supporting a young quarterback that they're trying to bring along slowly and develop. Like, it was clear watching Man in the Arena that Bill Belichick had the guardrails up. Him and Charlie Weiss had the guardrails up for Tom Brady, and they weren't going to let him lose the game. And ultimately, the supporting cast, that offensive line, the running backs that they had, the receivers that they had in place, they were strong enough to be able to support Tom being able to take them on a run. And then the other thing that I thought, which was really impressive from Bill Belichick, that offseason, they signed Drew Bledsoe to a 10-year, $103 million contract. So going into 2001, Drew Bledsoe was the guy. Now, we all know that he got knocked out after the, what, second game of the season with Mo Lewis against the Jets. We know what happened with that. But the Patriots were sitting there at 5-5, and Drew Bledsoe was ready to roll again. And Bill made the tough call to sit the $100 million man in lieu of Tom Brady, and then they go on a run. And I think they finished the season 11-5. And so that to me was probably one of the most impressive coaching decisions that Bill Belichick has ever made, having the foresight and having the wherewithal to bench a guy that the organization just committed those kind of resources to for a guy that was a six-round draft pick 2 years ago.
It does kind of remind you how much of the same cloth him and Nick Saban are cut from, considering how many years ago did we watch Nick Saban bench the starting quarterback in Jalen Hurts at halftime of a national championship game for a then-freshman Tua Tagovailoa. Like, that takes a lot of security and a lot of what you just talked about, that foundation laid in all those other ways. This year's Patriots, I don't know if we can liken Cam Newton to that necessarily. You know, was cut in the offseason, the vaccine, obviously, some part of that, in addition to Mac Jones just flat-out being close enough to party in that instance before the season. And Cam Newton certainly wasn't fresh off a $100 million contract.
Nah.
That's probably a smidge different in this
area.
But, Chris.
But it was a tough call, though.
It was
a tough call in
close.
Training camp. Bill
that.
Belichick having to make the decision to go with a rookie quarterback over a guy that it seemed like he had full trust in Cam Newton, because all of the things that we had heard from both him and Cam was that they both believed in each other. They both respected the work ethic that the other one had. And so for Bill to make that call and to say, not only are we going to go with Mac Jones as our starting quarterback, but we're going to just cut Cam Newton in training camp because we don't want to have the distraction of a backup quarterback that has the profile of Cam, not to mention he wasn't vaccinated. Like, for him to make that tough call on the eve of the regular season kicking off, like, that, again, was another one of those situations when it comes to the most important position on the team where Bill Belichick has to discern and use his better judgment. And it seems like that's paying off in the way of his team being firmly in the thick of things, not only with the playoff picture, but actually competing for the AFC East crown.
Yeah, so in addition to reminding you guys that everything we just talked about, you can hear on the Man in the Arena podcast. It's a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Brady's career and that Patriot dynasty. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For a mortgage experience you can be a fan of, Rocket can. Chris, you mentioned it right there. Bill Belichick's got this team firmly in the thick of it. They were at the center of the attrition of the COVID year last season. Mac Jones comes in, and he has steadily progressed because they had that plan around him here. And I wonder, remember after last year when Tom Brady won the Super Bowl and everyone wanted to go back to the is it more Brady or Belichick debate and all that stuff? Because it was convenient. They said Tom won the divorce here. I got to imagine the way that this season is progressing is putting a big feather back in the cap of Bill Belichick, right? Where maybe people are going to back off some of what I thought were insane takes about how all of a sudden Bill Belichick had deserved so much less credit for what had happened.
Yeah, no question about it. Like, if they take a rookie quarterback and they're able to somehow, some way make it to the postseason, you're talking about just being 1 year removed from Tom Brady deciding that he's going to leave in free agency and then being back in the playoffs and back in contention. Like, that is one of the quickest rebuilds that we've ever seen in the sport. Like, I mean, you got to give credit to them. They were in salary cap hell. When Tom Brady decided that he was going to leave, and that actually led to the decision. But, you know, credit Bill Belichick for being able to find a way to retool it. And you know that Robert Kraft was looking at him sideways when he spent all of that money in free agency. But Bill Belichick is getting a return on investment. It looks like he knew exactly what he was doing. And although it wasn't an ideal circumstance at the end, because there were some salary cap constraints the last couple of years on the Patriots because of what they did with Tom at the end, like, Bill Belichick has gotten this thing back to a point where you're saying they're about to open up another window for this team to compete and win championships.
And Bill Belichick was honest about that, unusually honest about that salary cap situation last year. And it's so interesting, Chris, on the day that we were talking so much about the Golden State Warriors and what they've done, returning to now the top spot in most NBA power rankings, demolishing the Brooklyn Nets last night, because we said they have a concrete identity that they got back to.
Yeah.
Steph Curry being at the helm, one of the most unique weapons. Draymond Green and what he's done. Defense, passing, all these things that are uniquely Golden State. You could argue the Patriots have two or three identities they've gone through. And they went back to that first iteration of the Patriots dynasty, but we watched them evolve at almost every step of the way. And so for Bill Belichick to be able to go back into the bag to say, all right, I know how to do it when we've got this particular guy in the middle of our team leading the charge at quarterback, when we've got a young guy who we need to work around, and to have it built back this quickly accordingly, is just another impressive testament to what this entire operation has been about in New England. But coming up next, we mentioned what Golden State did last night. Let's look on the other side of that at the Brooklyn Nets and James Harden. How much can we still buy into him as one of the best in the league? Next on ESPN Radio.